interest in space since World War II with almost anybody, particularly in the space science area. And certainly, I believe you could possibly give a little better perspective on how it was in NASA headquarters, the getting started of the NASA program, and particularly as the Von Braun group came to NASA, and how this maybe impacted space science concerns, which you were just getting going on, and General Ostrander coming in. That was the first breakoff, I guess, of the Silverstein dominion of managing all programs. And then, of course, the Centaur and the liquid hydrogen certainly was a direct relationship to space science, as it also relates to Saturn. So,
sure.
Well, let's hear what the questions are.
Well, I think the genius basically summed it up. We were, we just have a feeling of a gap about where Saturn sort of looked, what Saturn looked like from headquarters. And I wonder if you could go back and make some comments as you remember the origins of the Saturn program and how it fit into the entire NASA picture and how it related with Apollo, as Apollo
yes.
grew and so on.
Well, you're going to have to go to the files in order to get some of the details, because it was a very involved picture. But basically, in those early days, the problem was to map out a plan for what was at that time called a stable of launch vehicles that would cover various needs, ranging all the way from the very small satellite to the manned space flight program. At the same time, in those days, it was pretty clear to Abe Silverstein, who'd been working in this area at Lewis, that hydrogen technology could be directly applied and made to work, and that it would be a fairly clean and certainly highly effective propulsion technology because of the high specific impulse that you could develop. So, in those days, in mapping out the way one should go for very large payload capabilities, Silverstein pushed in the direction of using hydrogen technology. At the same time, there was already the early work that had been underway with the Von Braun group on the early versions of Saturn, the smaller version, and that could be built upon. As they discussed these things, they thought of various building blocks, and there were things all the way from Saturn 1s to Saturn 5s, and stages to these various combinations that they debated and talked about. And this was the time period, too, in which people also talked about the eventual necessity of something like a NOVA vehicle, which would be a step beyond the Saturn. Steps generally turned out to be about factors of three. As experience developed, you had a series of launch vehicles with one for the small things and another one three times as capable and another three times as capable, and so on. That was a rather economical and efficient way to cover the whole range of needs. Well, Saturn, with the what eventually became Saturn 1, and then eventually the Saturn 5, nicely fit in that threefold step, and then NOVA was another factor of two or three beyond that. Now, with that rambling, at least I've given you some of the background there. Abe Silverstein chaired the committee that met very constantly to review the possible approaches, and they finally came up with a conclusion that hydrogen technology was the thing to build on, that the Saturn 1 was a good initial step, but that Saturn 1 wouldn't do all that was needed, that you had to go to a larger vehicle, and eventually out of that came the Saturn 5, but it didn't come full-blown in the initial eventually emerged as the thing you finally needed.
Once the recommendation for liquid hydrogen came out, was that a pretty clean thing, or were there still rumblings here and there that this was trying perhaps to go too far too fast and was going to impact on the entire Apollo program? Or was it looked at as a good thing because it would help later on boosters for other escape payload missions and so on?
Well, there were various rumblings. There were those who felt that you ought to use non-cryogenic fuels because of the operational simplicity of dealing with them. When you have cryogenic fuels, you've just got the problem of having to insulate to handle the very cold liquids of the evaporation problems and so on. So it looked to many as though going this route was serving the R&D space exploration needs all right, because for those you could spend the time necessary in the field to get things off and so on, but it wasn't serving to advance the technology that would be applicable to, say, weapon systems and so on. There were people who felt that what we were doing in this arena ought to serve both ends, exploration and the other uses. So there were rumblings, and there were rumblings of the kind that you mentioned, that you're biting off more than you can chew, you haven't proved it yet, and so on. Abe Silverstein's position was fairly simple. It's just the way to go, you hear him say.
Yeah.
Anybody can see that.
Who were the people that were against this? Do you remember anybody who had reservations about it?
No, I can't pin names right now. Looking back there, I just recall hearing the discussions and the points of view. I would say that the military probably felt less enamored of the hydrogen approach. They dealt with it already in other vehicles. They were dealing with it. They at that period, there was a question as to whether things using cryogenics like liquid oxygen were really the way to go for missiles, hence the Minuteman type of approach, where you didn't have them. And you could just sit there, loaded, and wait. So that entered in. I would say mostly the operational vehicle people were those who objected or at least raised a question.
How did the difficulties with the Centaur, in a nutshell, impact your surveyor program? That was difficult in technology.
Yes, in fact, Surveyor came in first, so it was the first proof of the, not Surveyor, Centaur came in first, so it was the first real proof of the feasibility of using hydrogen technology. But that's another story, another very long story, which, to begin with, Centaur started in the Department of Defense as an R&D program to try to explore this type of capability. It started at low key, then in the middle of the stream, so to speak, requirements were loaded on it to support DOD missions and NASA missions. And it immediately then ran into difficulties because a low-key advanced technology type program requires one level of funding, but a program that is designed to meet deadlines to support operational requirements requires an entirely different level of funding and attention, management attention. And so it ran into difficulties because of that. Right about the time it was phasing over from this low-key type of approach to developing something for specific mission needs, NASA took it over, and NASA inherited that raft of problems. At that time, things like the Advent satellite, the Arents program, our Centaur, our planetary missions, and a number of others were all slated to go on this, and they all had their own requirements, and some of them were conflicting, and they made the development of Centaur an absolute nightmare trying to meet them, especially the Advent requirements, which were very demanding and kept changing as Advent grew. So we had a terrible problem with Centaur until we finally bit the bullet collectively between us and DOD and said, Centaur will serve Surveyor first. And after we get that done, then anything else it can do, fine. And with that one set of requirements to meet, we were able to straighten out the Centaur program and make it succeed.
There were occasions when the various directors from all the centers came to Washington and discussed the Apollo Saturn program and other things. And I was wondering if you can recall any occasions in those things when you were forced to bite the bullet and make decisions that impacted on the Apollo and the Saturn vehicles, etc. I guess what I'm getting at, how did those meetings go? How were the...
Well, you're talking to the wrong individual there, because I was off in another corner of the field wrestling with
the
space science and things of that sort. I was not involved in those meetings with center directors that concerned Saturn.
Okay, did you have a concept in your mind then of the Saturn program, the Apollo program, in terms of space sciences? Was it just something that existed over here, or how did you see it in the overall design?
In the overall picture, Saturn was something primarily for the larger scale manned space flight activities at that time. In those early years, I was concerned with getting rides in the immediate future for things like our lunar program, our unmanned lunar program, the Rangers, for explorers, for the orbiting solar observatories and things of that sort. And those involved building the scout, using the Atlas, upgrading the Atlas, using the Agena, using the Delta, which was a vehicle that grew out of the Viking technology, and the Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing the Centaur into it. So Saturn was something off there in the future as far as we were concerned.
How about the transfer of the Centaur from Marshall to Lewis? Were you in on that, or was
yes.
that strictly the...
Yes, sir. I backed that one, kind of helped push that one. Ed Cartwright and I felt very strongly that had to go from Marshall to Lewis, because Marshall has a characteristic, more so then, perhaps, than now, being a one thing at a time kind of center. And the one thing they had was Saturn. And so they didn't give the attention to our Juno program, for example, that we felt it ought to have from our point of view. They did not give the attention to the Centaur that we thought they should. And we urged then that it be taken from Marshall to Lewis, not because Marshall couldn't do it, but because Marshall wasn't doing it.
So your view of Saturn then was kind of as a project that really ended with a landing on the moon, and it then just disappeared, or was there something later on?
Don't put those words in my mouth. I'm just saying that the Saturn project, from our point of view, wasn't at the time serving our needs, and we had other fish to fry and necessarily gave our attention to frying those fish.
Mm-hmm.
We just, at those times, had not thought of using Saturn. That was too far in the future. Now, as time went on, and we got our launch vehicle stable pretty well into being, and our missions flying, then we began to think of Saturn for things like Voyager and deep space missions to the planets and so on.
Yeah.
But that didn't come until Saturn was well underway and Saturn 1s had been flying and so on, you see.
Mm-hmm.
That thinking came after we were well underway and Saturn was well underway. It was not in the initial thinking of planning.
John, did you want to bring anything more in?
Not at that point.
Okay. Go ahead. No. Okay. Do you you think then, from your standpoint, you've mentioned that Marshall was kind of a one thing at a time operation. Is that inherently good or inherently bad, or how would you could you characterize that a little bit more?
Well, I wouldn't put it in such value terms. It was just a fact of life. They had the job of bringing into being what was then to be the largest launch vehicle ever put together, and to make it work, and to make it work in such a way that it would be safe to put men on it, and that was quite a job. And they just put that first in all their thinking. It meant that when they took on a program like the Juno program, instead of moving several of these along at once, they'd work on one at a certain level, and that was a level they felt they could carve out and apply to it. And when they flew it, then they'd go back and pick up another and move it. And that wasn't adequate to meet the needs of the science program. Also meant that when they ran into trouble on the Juno program, and you run into trouble on all these things, that that trouble lasted longer than it should, because they weren't putting their big, high-powered team on it. It certainly turned out well for Saturn.
Mm.
And, you know, that...
That was the point of it.
That was the point. That was the point of it.
You're in a position now, I gather, though, from what you said, that the Saturns that you thought about using maybe for deeper things is kind of gone. It just isn't there now. I mean, other more advanced deep space missions.
No, we think about using Saturns for deep space missions and so on. There are some Saturns left. They aren't in the program. We don't have the funds to do it, but some missions to the outer planets could well use Saturns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible that someday we'll get the funding to do it. And if so, we have uses.
Yeah, you have some studies then that you...
Yeah.
Another question I've long had, and maybe you can shed some light on it. It fits this Space Science Board a meeting and letter, and then release of the letter in February meeting, where, of course, Dr. Berkner, long associated with the beginning of the space science area. But you remember their position on manned spaceflight, February 28th, and the letter is subsequently released. This is during that period of some criticism with Mercury, very violent criticism with Mercury, and you know, the genesis of this NASA sort of getting wired in with the Kennedy administration, and Mr. Webb sort of getting hold of the at least getting a budget better than the Eisenhower last budget. Were you party to any of this Space Science Board? Deliberations during that period?
Yes, I had the opportunity to hear a lot of that discussion. The Space Science Board was the first place in which I heard the idea of going to the moon as an objective brought up. As far as I can recall, it was brought up before we began pushing it to the administration from NASA. Berkner brought it up in the 1960s, I recall. And there was a mood there to support it, to recommend it as an objective that was easily understandable, that was good for the country, that would pull the space program together. And I believe that Berkner himself and many of the board members did support pushing. At the same time, after Mercury got underway, there was a lot of concern on the part of scientists, individual scientists, and it was discussed in the Space Science Board that a disaster in the Mercury program, using launch vehicles that weren't designed originally and built to be man-rated, could have a disastrous impact on the overall program. And their feeling was they'd rather not take that risk. They were afraid that it might stop even the unmanned effort, that it would be better to wait for manned flights until you had launch vehicles that were designed and built to fly men, properly tested, before before you got into that. I remember talking at length with Hugh Oldershaw about it. He was very much concerned, wishing that we not go ahead with the Mercury program, urging us to take the road of caution and so on. So you had sort of a dichotomy there. The board did originally support very strongly the Apollo program. That's where it first came. But they were worried about the ability of the Mercury program to succeed.
And the Harding subcommittee, of course, was very active then.
And then, of course, later, the great costs of the Apollo program and the squeezing effect, at least as they saw it, on other programs led the scientific community to be very much concerned about Apollo. Now, of course, the scientific community can't even contemplate stopping Apollo. So, there you are.
Well, I was just noticing today in reading a chronology that the preamble of the first issuance of NASA's 10-year plan pointed to the whole program and said this is directed towards the ultimate goal of manned exploration of space. And it looked a little different light to me today than the first time I heard it. Then, of course, the Space Science Board letter was really one of the first public endorsements of manned spaceflight, and it came at this critical time, post the Wiesner committee report, president-elect. Of course, Space Science Board is worth a separate story sometime anyway.
Yes.
That was a critical period there in February and March.
You mentioned a note of caution on the Mercury program. Was there a similar note of caution expressed by, let's say, Houston in the Apollo program after the first landing as to not undertake more ambitious, more difficult flights?
Yes.
The idea that once we'd made the successful landing, why press the statistics?
Yes, the Manned Spacecraft Center people pointed out that the hardware that we were using was a first generation, really, of its kind, of the manned flight type of hardware, necessarily then experimental in nature, needing loving care in order to make it go each time. And therefore, Houston's view was that we should assess very carefully whether to continue once you've accomplished it and weigh the returns against the costs. This is a point of view that's been expressed by others. There are congressmen who have said, you know, if you've made your nickels, you can lose them all if you have a disaster. Why not just cut it off now? And it takes quite a bit of soul-searching to continue the program with those questions raised. But the reason for continuing is shown in the crescendo of returns, Apollo 11 to Apollo 12, Apollo 14 to 15. 15 is absolutely stupendous in comparison to what you got from Apollo 11. Bears out the wisdom of continuing the program. Yet at each stage you can say now, will Apollo 16 be that much better than Apollo 15? There are those who think so.
You know, Shepard almost didn't fly. The day of MR3 was almost canceled, which does relate to the Space Science Board and more directly to the President's Science Advisor. But certainly they had questioned everything, and then Wiesner went beyond it, just as a personal friend of the President, to raise a question. Can't afford a Vanguard with a man on the way up on the pad.
Yeah, it's strange. I suppose you've read the Vanguard history. It was one of the most successful programs we've ever had. You never developed a launch vehicle more quickly than that was. And for a program in which you said to begin with, if one of the launches succeeds, it will be just a success. And you had three of them.
I hope
odd to consider why it's regarded as a failure.
I hope these two jets are two of the people in Huntsville that read the Vanguard history. Maybe some others. Do you have any other questions?
I think that ought to do it for me.
thanks. Thank you.
Okay.